guide me wherever I go. Step by step, Lord, you're leading me home. Like a stream in the desert, like a path through the snow. Wherever I am in this world, you're guiding me home.
Please join me in prayer. Thank you, God, for this amazing group of people gathered here to see the counseling and all those participating in leadership standing up. I just give you great thanks for bringing all these paths together at this moment in time right here at Camp Winnie. We give you thanks. And we also thank you for guiding us home tomorrow and knowing that we are always at home with you, God. Thank you. Amen. Well, it's Friday night, isn't it? It seems like sometimes around our house on Friday night, it's like, are you going to cook? No. Aren't you going to cook? No. Well, maybe we have some leftovers in the refrigerator. Let's pull out the leftovers and put them on the island and just make a plate. Well, that's kind of what tonight is talk-wise. It's kind of things that, some things that I didn't get to cover in other talks that I wanted to share with you now. Some little vignettes. For example, the Taoist saying, what's in the way is the way. How about that? Think of something in your life that seems to be kind of in the way right now. Can you think of something that you kind of wish wasn't there? It's in the way. Well, the Taoists would say, what's in the way is the way. So, Kartok. Tom Magliozzi said, happiness equals reality minus expectations. How about that? You like that, Eric, right? You like Kartok. Happiness equals reality minus expectations. I think that's something to think about. Oh, here's one I like. You may be the only Bible that some people read. Say that with me. You may be the only Bible that some people read. Now put it in the first person. I may be the only Bible that some people read. I like that. Let's see. This is the little page of haven't covered yet things. We've lived in our home for six and a half years, and shortly after we moved up there, early one morning, there was a scuffle in the shrubs outside of our bedroom window, and it sounded like a bobcat growl. And in the morning, I saw that a little oak tree that had about a one-inch diameter trunk was broken, and something happened out there in that little shrub area. Well, shortly after that, we started seeing little One Ear. She's a squirrel with one ear. And Tanya, have you seen her? Yeah?
No, I have her picture on my fridge.
Yeah, Dennis took a great picture of her. It was a Christmas card one year. Anyway, so we have little One Ear, and she's been around for 6 years, and she is just the sweetest little thing. We don't feed her. You know, we just let her be natural like all the other little squirrels and critters around. But when she comes around, I tap on the banister of the deck, and I talk to her, little one ear, I'm so glad to see you. And she'll run up the tree and sit on the branch. And, you know, I like to think she's aware that I'm communicating with her at a very deep level. Well, well, at least at a shallow level. But anyway, before we were coming up here on this trip, it had been about a week and a half. Sometimes this happens. Oh, Dennis says it'd been 3 weeks? He thinks it had been 3 weeks since we had seen her. And I was getting a little anxious just because I wanted to see her before I left. So if I saw a bird or a squirrel or a deer or something, I'd say, well, if you see little One Ear, tell her to come home. I want to see her. And when I went on my morning walks, you know, I'd see the squirrels on neighboring properties. Tell One Ear to come home. And so, you know, the days are going by. And I think it was the day before we left. Dennis is sitting out on the deck eating his breakfast. And he kind of tapped on the window. And I opened the door slowly, and there she was. She's climbing up the tree. And oh, she was actually on the deck. She actually came on the deck and was drinking out of one of the pans under a plant. So she comes up there to drink water sometimes. But anyway, I was just so glad that little One Ear, that all her friends told her, Marcia wants you to come home. So she came home. Okay. Remember, we're cleaning out the refrigerator now and putting all the leftovers out here on the island. Let's see. You already heard this one, but I'm going to say it again because our pastor's wife, Mrs. Chandler, did have this as a magnet on her refrigerator. God, give me patience and give it to me now. and the letters got bigger on the... I like that. Let's see. When I was working with Spirit in Action, there were a couple of fellows from Kenya who were visiting Willits to visit Ecology Action, which is a fabulous farm where they teach biointensive gardening. And so it was arranged that I would meet them at this woman's house and take them, and we had them overnight. John Okamba and his friend Wamalwa. And so I wanted to show them some of the beauty of the California coast. So we took a ride south of San Francisco. It's just gorgeous. You know, you go down these big hills and you see the ocean. And it happened to be October. And so we went down, we got all the way down to Half Moon Bay to the beach, and Wamalwa. Well, I'll tell you two things. Wamalwa said, well, I certainly know what the American's favorite vegetable is. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, pumpkin. They sure sell a lot of pumpkins around here. You know, Halloween time, all these stands around are selling pumpkins. It was very challenging to explain to him about those pumpkins. That no, we were not going to be eating all those pumpkins. It was puzzling. The other thing he said was, same guy, Wamalwa, said, what are all those people doing out there in the water? I said, well, they're surfing. And he said, well, I see young men out there. I said, yeah, they're surfing. Well, why aren't they working? I said, well, I think it's a day off from school. Maybe it was Saturday, and they're just having a lot of fun. And he said, my father would have given me such a bad time if he had seen me wasting my time like that. So it was just like, you know, just imagine when you're in Kenya living in little villages, you are working, and you're eating those vegetables that you grow. Well, the next day I dropped them off at another person's home who was going to be hosting them. It was evening time. We drove up to her house, and going up the stairway, next to the stairs, were jack-o'-lanterns, pumpkins that were carved out with candles inside. And Wamalwa just looked at me and kind of shook his head like, I know what those are. I know they're not going to be eaten. But it was so interesting When you look at the larger scope, the larger scheme of things, we do have some kind of strange patterns here in our country, and that's one of them. Okay, let's see. Oh, yes, we have a garden, and some of the, like the beets, when they're small, if you don't put this netting over them, then the critters are going to come and eat the leaves, and we won't have beets and everything. So Dennis has this web, plastic webbing that he puts over the plants. And this happened several times that a snake, was it a garter snake, Dennis? A gopher snake. A gopher snake got entangled in this netting. And the first couple of times, Dennis would come in later and tell me, well, he had to get scissors and cut the netting to free the gopher snake. Well, then a few days later, he came in and he said, this gopher snake is really entangled. So put your gloves on. I need your help. Have you ever held a snake? I was astounded because he was, you know, the head was being cut out of this netting, and I was holding the rest of it. The snake was about maybe 3.5 feet long, but the strength of a snake was just incredible. We had to do that twice, and then on the third time, we decided to carry the snake down to the far end of the neighbor's property. Nobody's living there. The far end of the neighbor's property, where there's this gully that goes down to the river. And, you know, we haven't seen that garter snake since. So I hope it made its way down to the river. But it just made me realize how we can get entangled in things sometimes, or get wrapped up in responsibilities that we want at that time, but then they can become kind of overwhelming and kind of strangling. So that was just the image I got sometimes when we were dealing with the snake. I have to be careful myself. I can get overextended and overcommitted. Okay, let's see what we have here. Well, let's see, how old was I in 1992? 46, 86. I was 46 years old. And I thought, I'm kind of ready for a new profession. I'd been a teacher, and I'd been tutoring, and I'd been teaching music. And I thought, there's some urge inside of me. And I talked with our pastor. We had a clergy couple at that time, and Bobby, the female. I just said to her, be prayerful for me, please. I think there's something that I'm looking for, and I don't really know what it is. So we talked and prayed, and a few days later, she called me, and she said, I have an idea. We both thought that maybe being a therapist would be a profession that I would enjoy. Of course, it would require more education. She knew of a place called the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology down in Palo Alto. They had a 2-year program for a master's in transpersonal psychology. And then if you went to a third year, you would get a master's in counseling psychology. So I decided to do this program, and it's another avenue that has been a very growing experience for me. What the heck is transpersonal psychology? Well, it integrates the spiritual, social, emotional, intellectual, physical, creative person. And it's the focus, at least at this institute, was teaching us how to share these areas with people who have, who would like to be growing psychologically, spiritual, social, emotional, intellectual, physical, and creative. What does that sound like to you? What does it sound like?
Skills.
It sounds like CFO to me too. Yeah. And so this was a great 2-year program. And at the end, we needed to do we had an integration seminar, and we needed to do a project. And there were 23 people in my class, and we kind of talked about what we could envision as an integration program. And in this class, I told them about CFO. I told them about Glenn Clark and the program, and there were two women in that class, Candace and Anne, who really loved this concept. So for our master's thesis, we created the journey of wholeness. Dana, you were talking about CFO being related to our wholeness. Well, we created a program called Journey of Wholeness. And basically, we created a chapter for each of those categories that I already read, and we had a series of workshops. We each did this individually, gathering a group together, and I had at the beginning like 10 friends and friends of friends, and we had a 6-month program, and we met twice a month, and we each month we would choose one of those aspects and study it and experience it. And we had a retreat at the beginning of the 6-month time, kind of an orientation, and a retreat at the end. And I'll tell you, it was really, really wonderful. Just like this is wonderful. This, I would like to read a little paragraph for you. When we gather together in the journey of wholeness, we will represent a wide variety of spiritual backgrounds and experiences. We will look at our own spiritual histories and share them together, and ultimately, we will see, I believe, that beings who have become the living spirit have come following the paths of a full span of spiritual traditions. As we meet together in the loving and accepting community of Journey of Wholeness, I believe that we will see this. I'd like to quote Ram Dass from his book, Grist for the Mill. He said, "We come together, representatives of many forms, many methods, all the way from Krishnamurti, who says there is no method, to Krishna consciousness, or fundamental Christianity, which says our way is the only way. And where we meet is what is common to all forms. What is common to all our forms is choiceless awareness, is pure love, is flow and harmony in the universe, the absence of clinging. If you follow all these methods to the apex, you are pushed beyond form. You are pushed beyond the moment. The merging with God is right here." He goes on to say, "All methods get to the top of the mountain. You can find God in everyone. Then you are no longer a Buddhist, or a Hindu, or a Christian, or a Jew, or a Muslim. You are love. You are truth. And love and truth have no form. They flow into forms." This was a very wonderful aspect of Journey of Wholeness, because the people gathered, and we each had like 10 people in our groups, and then when we met for retreats, we were the larger group. And the sharing among us on all levels was very, very rich. So we did this for 2 rounds. And then one of them moved and one of them got divorced and we moved on to other things. But it was very enlightening to me. I loved it. I'd like to share At the last lesson camp, Diana Halpenny was our speaker, and she shared this that I would like to share with you tonight because I think it's very beautiful. This is the golden rule in 13 sacred texts. The native spirituality, we are as much alive as we keep the earth alive. The Baha'i faith, lay not on any soul a load that you would not wish to be laid upon you, and desire not for anyone the things that you would not desire for yourself. Buddhism, treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Christianity, from Matthew 7:12, in everything do to others as you would have them do to you, for this is the law and the prophets. Confucianism, one word which sums up the basis of all good conduct, loving kindness. Do not do to others what you do not want done to yourself. Hinduism, this is the sum of duty. Do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you. Islam, not one of you truly believes until you wish for others what you wish for yourself. Jainism, one should treat all creatures in the world as one would like to be treated. Judaism, what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor. This is the whole Torah, and the rest is commentary. Go and learn it. Sikhism, I am a stranger to no one, and no one is a stranger to me. Indeed, I am a friend to all. Taoism, regard your neighbor's gain as your own gain, and your neighbor's loss as your own loss. Unitarianism, we affirm and promote respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part. Zoroastrianism, do not do unto others whatever is injurious to yourself. So I resonate to the idea that at the heart of the world's spiritual traditions, it's love, it's loving kindness, it's doing unto others as we would want to do unto ourselves. And I think that so much in our world is tension around our beliefs. And I just want to affirm the underlying commonality that we have. This is important to me. I think I'd like to ask you to stand for a minute. I'm going to ask Dennis. Dennis, let's do one thing as necessary, because this is my closing talk, and there is just one thing that's necessary. And we did it once, and I'll help you remember. Yeah, let's stand up and just get a little fresh air here. Here's the chorus.
One thing is necessary, one thing is necessary, one thing is necessary. What could stop your fussing? Stop your fussing and fretting, 'cause one thing. Necessary, what could it be? Mary was quietly kneeling near Jesus, listening with all of her heart, while Martha begrudgingly did all the tasks. When Jesus said tenderly, Martha, Martha, one thing is necessary, 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 what could it be? When you or angry or lonely, and pressures are getting you down. Draw closer to Jesus and listen to him with all of your heart as he gently shows you what one thing is.
Have a seat. Maybe you're a little more awake now. Okay. Let's see what else we have here. Well, I think there's something else that is a little bit unusual about me. And that is that I find that I'm very moved and privileged to be with someone as they take their last breath. It is a very holy and sacred moment, especially if that person has been struggling to see the peace that comes. My mom had a major stroke, and she lived for 9 months after her stroke. And David, you're a physical therapist, right? My mother was strong. She was strong, and she was determined. And she did everything. She followed that physical therapy program to the T. She really, really did her very best. But the moment came when she was told that she was going to be now entering maintenance therapy. And she said, well, what is maintenance therapy? And the physical therapist said, well, you have reached your, what we see as your maximum capabilities. So we'll maintain you at this level. She'd been working on this for months and months. Well, when she realized that she was going to be wheelchair-bound for the rest of her life and uncomfortable and in pain without taking major medications, she decided she was not wanting to go on. And she was getting urinary tract infections, wearing diapers, and actually a younger woman in her facility died very suddenly. And so my mother, she had trouble speaking, but she could make herself understood. She wanted to know why Miriam died. And she had died from an undetected urinary tract infection. So my mother got me and my brother together and said, next time I have a UTI, I don't want it treated. I just don't want it treated. Well, we had to get together with the administrator of the facility, with the chaplain of the facility, with a doctor, my brother and I, my mother. Everybody had to be present to affirm that this was her decision. And we all could agree and affirm this. And she was extremely motivated. In fact, a few days before she died, I could see her mouth was kind of parched. She, I said, Mom, would you just like a little bit of water? Just, you know, your mouth is parched. Would you like some water? And she said, just hold my hand. Just hold my hand. So that's what I did. The last few days, I just held her hand, and my brother came over and was with us, and then he needed to leave, actually because he had just been through the death of his very closest friend. And so I just stayed with Mom, held her hand, got in bed with her, held her hand. In the middle of the night, a beautiful, large, dark, dark-skinned man named Abbas, like Abba, Abbas came in. I had met him before to bathe her. And in the past, I would leave the room, but Abbas said, no, I'd like you to stay. And he was so beautiful, bathing his dark, dark skin against her pale, pale skin. So tender, so beautiful. I'll just never forget it. It was lovely. And put her back in bed, and she just passed very peacefully. She passed very peacefully. And I just, to me, it's a very sacred moment. I've had the privilege of being with several people at their last breath. I guess my point is, I don't think we need to be afraid of it, because we're going to have our last breath at some point. And I'm happy to know. It's a blessing to me to see the peace, to see the peace. And, you know, I believe we have a good God. I don't have any answers. I don't have any sense that I know what's going to happen after the last breath. I really don't. But I believe that whatever it is going to be a wonderful thing, even if it's nothing. It's going to be a wonderful nothing. So anyway, I just open to that myself, and invite you also to be open to that possibility. One of our very dear CFO friends asked Dennis to be his durable power of attorney for healthcare and for finances too, Bill Dovesmith. And he had a stroke, and then he had a second stroke, and he said, let's make a plan. In case I have, well, after the first stroke, he said, in case I have another stroke, let's say one finger means yes and two fingers means no. So if I can't speak, just ask me a question. Bill, can you give me a yes, and he gives one finger. Can you give me a no, and he gave two fingers. I mean, we practiced this. Well, as his doctor had said to him, it's likely you'll have another stroke, and he did. And I was with him immediately afterwards in the hospital. He couldn't speak. But I asked him the question. I said, Bill, do you want to have water and nourishment? If you do, hold up one finger. No finger came up. Bill, if you do not want water and nourishment, hold up two fingers. Bill passed very peacefully in a few days. No water, no nourishment. I like the thought of making choices. I like the thought of making my own choices and making a plan. And I thought, Bill, I thought that was a very, very wonderful plan that he came up with. So I share that with you. We had an upstairs apartment in our house. I told you Mary lived up there for a while. And we had a lovely gathering of folks who came into that apartment over the more than 30 years that we lived there, 12 different languages. We had a Hispanic woman, a Czechoslovakian man. We had an Asian woman, an African-American woman. It was really great. And so I had a friend named Lois. We met while we were walking up at San Bruno Park. I like to take walks up in the hills. I met her because I was leaning over a puddle one day, and she was walking by. We didn't know each other. She stopped and said, what are you looking at in that puddle? And I said, I think they're pollywogs. So we're down on our knees looking in this puddle, and they looked like pollywogs. And anyway, we started saying, well, let's meet up there at the, at the trailhead on Thursday morning at 10 or something, and we started walking together. So I shared with Lois that our unit was coming available. Did she know of anybody who needed a unit? And she said, well, yes, I do. I do. His name is Troy. And he's living back in some other state. I don't remember which state, but he wants to come home to San Francisco because he's HIV positive, and he wants to be with friends and family in San Francisco as he goes through his journey. Well, Carl was 12, and at this point, we had divided the apartment, so Carl had the front room upstairs, then the apartment was a studio with a locked door of its own. Carl had his door. So Carl and the tenant shared the upstairs. Well, we invited Lois over to talk with us about Troy and about HIV, and she explained to all of us what we could expect and answered questions, and with Carl especially, we were concerned, and we just all agreed we wanted Troy to come and live with us. We wanted that to happen. He did come, and he was a delightful, delightful fellow. Someone had given him a little car. Do you remember this, Dennis? A little toy car, and he wanted to give it to Carl. Somehow, in the space between Carl's door and Troy's door, there was a bookshelf and a light fixture and a windowsill and this and that. That car got passed to different places. And so you never knew where you were going to find the car. If I found it, I'd hide it someplace else. If Troy found it, he'd hide it. If Carl found it, he'd hide it. One day, Carl and I could not find the car. We looked every place, everywhere. Troy had taken off the light fixture and placed the car in the light fixture and screwed it up there again. This was a very good-natured fellow, and we grew to love him very much. And the time came when Troy's health started to deteriorate, and we were grieving, of course, and he stayed at home with us as long as possible. And finally, he did need to be hospitalized. And Lois was very gracious with us. She would let us know we could come visit. And Troy finally passed peacefully. And his apartment was upstairs. And so I was cleaning out his apartment. And as I was cleaning it out, I cleaned out the refrigerator. I'm thinking, well, he doesn't need to eat this bread anymore. And I'm just thinking, oh, you don't need to eat this bread no more. Oh, he called me baby. He called me baby. Oh, you don't need to eat this bread no more, baby. You don't need to eat this bread no more. With a banquet for your soul, there's no pain and you are whole. You don't need to eat this bread no more. Oh, you don't need to wear this shirt no more, baby. You don't need to wear this shirt no more. Your halo and your wings replace all earthly things.
You don't need to wear the shirt no more. Oh, you don't need to drive your truck no more, baby. You don't need to drive your truck no more. Your spirit's moving free. You can be where you wanna be. You don't need to drive your truck no more. Oh, you don't need to pay your rent no more, baby. You don't need to pay your rent no more. In the high rise where you're living, all is free and all's forgiven. You don't need to pay your rent no more. Well, there's just one little thing I do wanna say. Please keep sending your love our way. We're missing your smiles, your teasing and your laughter, but we'll be with you again someday after. We don't need to eat this bread no more, and we don't need to wear these shirts no more. And we don't need to drive our trucks no more. And we don't need to pay our rent no more, baby. No more, baby. No more. Hallelujah. That's what came as I was cleaning out Troy's apartment. So I have a little gift for you. This is from 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 to 3. Are we beginning all over again to produce our credentials? Do we, like some people, need letters of introduction to you or from you? No, you are all the letter we need, a letter written on your heart. Any man can see it for what it is and read it for himself. And as for you, it is plain that you are a letter that has come from Christ, given to us to deliver, a letter written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, written not on stone tablets, but on the pages of the human heart. So I'd like those of you willing to stand, please stand. I'm going to sing a song for you as we go back home. If you'd like to stand, this is for you. You are a letter that has come from Christ, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. You are a letter that has come from Christ, written with the Spirit of the living God. A that all can read, a letter from Christ that all can read. You are a letter that has come from Christ, written not on stone but on the pages of the human heart. You are a letter that has come from Christ, written on the pages of the human heart. You are this, a letter. that all can be again. A letter that all can read. A letter from Christ that all can read.
Bless you, beautiful letters from Christ. I love you. Thank you for the gift of this week. It's been wonderful for me. Bless you all.
Thank you. Thy kingdom come.